Chapter 11. King got back to the motel room with a sack full of fast food cheeseburgers, a liter bottle of Coke, a six-pack of Coors, and the local papers. King winced at the pine disinfectant smell and the artificial floral stench of the cheap soap that hit him in the face when he stepped into the room. He kicked the door shut behind him and shook his head at the look of the place. All done up in deep browns and mustard gold, the place hadn't seen new furnishings since the Carter administration. But they had to wait it out here only another day. Hump, his big body slouched across the ratty quilt, swung his legs off the bed at the sight of his pal. He muted the TV, the black preacher he'd been watching now silently waving his Bible around above his head like a machete. "Here." King flung the bag of burgers on the bed and put the bottle of Coke on top of the fiberboard and veneer nightstand. He popped open a Coors and took the papers over to what passed for a desk.
"This is Coke, King," Hump said. "Yeah, and so what?" "I wanted Pepsi. Didn't they have no Pepsi? Coke is too sweet."
"Hump, for Christ's sakes, you know how long it took me to find a fucking payphone? When I got to the store, I grabbed the first cola I found. Deal with it."
"Okay," he said, unable to hide his disappointment. He felt a little better after inhaling two of the four cheeseburgers in the bag.
"King, there's two burgers left. You want?
Knock yourself out. I ate."
Hump liked that. He could have eaten a half dozen more, but four was good for now. He took a big pull on the Coke and made a face.
"Why they make this stuff so sweet, King? Why do you think?"
"Like I give a shit.
They find the old lady yet? What's the papers say?"
"Nothing."
"They ain't found her yet? Maybe it'll be a few days and we can get far away."
"Nah, Hump, they'll find her today, most likely. Even though we left the truck in Salem, the delivery company will just follow the route back to the old lady's house. Anyways, we aren't going anyplace. I set a meet for tomorrow."
"But we didn't find nothing in the house and we ripped the place all apart." "Man, the walls in them old houses is tough to deal with. You can just punch through plasterboard, but those plaster and lath walls knocked the crap out of me."
"The man don't know we didn't find anything, right?"
"I guess."
"Then we're good. We'll get the money out of him."
"How are we gonna do that, King?"
"You let me worry about that, okay?"
"I always do." "So, when they find the old woman, what are they gonna do to us?"
King snorted. "They gotta catch us first.
I mean, it's not like we really killed her or nothing. She just kinda died."
"I'm not a lawyer, Hump, but I don't think the cops will see it like that."
Hump got agitated, jumping off the bed.
"But we didn't try to kill her. And if she would have just kept her yap shut, we wouldn't have had to put nothing in her mouth."
"Who are you trying to convince?"
Hump didn't like that, balling his huge hands into fists so tight the blood seemed to drain out of him. The veins in his thick neck popped out.
"What's that supposed to mean?"
"Relax, pal. Go back to watching your preacher and finish your food," King said, finishing off his beer and popping open a second one.
"When I'm done reading the papers, I'm going over to the office and see if they have a business center with a computer. This way I can find out up-to-the-minute stuff about if they found the body and what's going on."
Hump calmed almost as quickly as he had gotten riled. He unmuted the TV, opened up the wrapper on his third cheeseburger, and took a bite.
"Let us, brothers and sisters, turn to Leviticus, chapter 24, verses 17 to 21, for an answer to the question of vengeance and repayment for our most egregious of earthly sins. If a man takes the life of any human being, he shall surely be put to death." Notice there's no equivocation, no ifs, ands, or buts, no excuses, no guilty with an explanation. "Now, what of a man at war, as opposed to the greedy man who murders in..."
Hump couldn't shut off the TV fast enough. His bite of cheeseburger went down hard. He took a big swallow of Coke. He stood up from the bed, looked in the mirror, and quickly headed for the door. King was confused.
"What's up? I thought you liked the burgers."
"I lost my appetite. I'm going for a walk. I can't breathe in here no more."
King rubbed the stubble on his cheeks as he considered the danger of Hump leaving the room. He decided not to try to stop him.
He knew he couldn't have stopped him anyhow. Hump wasn't an easy man to stop once he got an idea in his head. Ideas weren't his strong suit, but when he got them, he hung on to them.
Stay close. It's going to take a few days to play our hand. We don't want to attract attention.
But Hump was already out the door, heading to the office to ask about local churches. Chapter 12. Tamara Elkin was leaning over the body when Jesse stepped into the bedroom. He winced at the sour background odor of vomit. He'd been to countless crime scenes and witnessed bodies in all manner of decay, but rarely had he been as hungover as he was just then. Tamara turned to him, saw the look on his face, and smiled.
"What's the deal?"
"I can't say much without opening her up, but she definitely didn't die in this bed."
"Anything you can say other than that, so we can get started? Right now, I'll settle for an educated guess."
"There's what looks like tape residue around her mouth, wrists, and ankles. There's some fibers stuck to the adhesive on the dermis proximate to her mouth, so if I had to venture a guess, I'd say whoever ransacked the house shoved some kind of gag in her mouth, then taped over it. She most likely vomited into the gag. But I can't say now whether that led directly to her death. She does have a split lip, which she received pre-mortem. See the bruising there?" Tamara pointed her gloved index finger at Maud Kane's face.
"Was she beaten, or..."
"I can't be sure, but it doesn't look as if she was sexually assaulted, and the bruising there around her mouth seems to be the only apparent damage. There's one other strange thing."
"Uh-huh."
"Someone cleaned her up a little and changed her clothes before placing her in here like this."
"Cleaned her up? Maybe to cover an assault?"
"I don't think so, but I'll know for sure when I get her on the table." Jesse considered the things Tamara had just told him. Some killers, most often serial killers, presented bodies in certain ways, either to satisfy some fantasy or obsession, or as a display for the police. Sometimes it was a function of remorse. At this point, before the autopsy and forensic results were in, it was unwise to draw conclusions about motive. But Jesse knew his own gut, and what his gut told him was that this was more of a train wreck than the handiwork of some Hannibal Lecter wannabe. He was thinking it through when he heard heavy footfalls on the staircase.
"Hey, Doc."
"Hey, Jesse," Lundquist said, standing in the hallway just outside the bedroom.
"Is it all right if I come in?"
Jesse saw echoes of suit in Lundquist. A tall, sturdily built man with reddish hair, warm blue eyes, and a boyish aw-shucks smile. Brian Lundquist seemed as if he would have been right at home showing his prize pig at the Minnesota State Fair. Similarities in appearance to suit notwithstanding, Jesse knew Lundquist to be an excellent detective, a cop's cop. You didn't rise to the rank of detective lieutenant because you were unfailingly polite or friendly. And they didn't make you acting head of homicide because you were somebody's pal. "Why don't you fellas talk somewhere else while I finish up in here?" Jesse nodded to Lundquist that he was coming out.
"Okay, Doc. Lundquist and I'll be downstairs if you need us."
When Jesse stepped out of the bedroom, he extended his right hand to the detective.
"My forensics unit's outside, Jesse. All I'm waiting on is your say-so. Get him in here."
After Lundquist had given the go-ahead, Jesse detailed Tamara Elkin's preliminary findings. He explained that he thought the old woman's death didn't seem, at least on the surface, to be a purposeful act. Lundquist kept his thoughts to himself as they went down to the basement to talk the crime scene over with Peter Perkins, and Perkins got right to it.
"They had her tied up to this lally column with duct tape," he said, pointing at the tape still stuck to the metal pole. "I also think she probably died here."
He pointed at stains on the slab at the base of the pole and held up an evidence bag containing the sock used to gag Maud Kane.
"As to the mess upstairs, I don't know."
He held up another evidence bag, this one containing the strip of tape used to cover the old woman's mouth.
"Looks like there's blood on this, too."
Jesse spoke up.
"ME says there's tape residue on the Vic's mouth and that her lip was split."
"All right, Peter, the state forensics unit is here. Go upstairs and fill them in. Lend them a hand." When Perkins reached the top of the stairs, Lundquist asked the question Jesse knew was coming. What do you think went on here? The upstairs looks like a demolition team got hold of it, and it doesn't look any better down here. Although Jesse knew homicide detectives were supposed to follow the evidence, it didn't mean their brains didn't work overtime once they got a good look at the crime scene. He had learned the hard way about the danger of falling in love with any single scenario before the evidence was in. Even then, he had seen colleagues ignore the facts in favor of their predetermined scenarios. He'd done it himself, but experience had also taught him not to completely ignore his gut. He looked around at the mess that was the basement. He remembered his first thought at seeing the chaos and blood upstairs. You've seen the house, how it was torn apart? The person or persons that did this were looking for something, and they didn't know where to look for it. It takes a long time to go through a house like this, and they had to keep the cane woman out of their hair while they searched. Maybe they got a little rough with her to see if she knew where it was before tearing the walls apart. My guess is that Vic's death was, if not exactly an accident, unanticipated. Same as the delivery guy showing up. But neither thing stopped these perps from ripping the place apart. What's that tell you? That whatever they were looking for is worth a lot of money. At least they think it. Before Jesse could finish, his phone vibrated in his pocket. He looked at the screen and excused himself. What is it, Molly? The mayor's car is coming up the street. I'm heading out. Trouble? Lundquist asked as Jesse moved to the stairs. Uh-huh. The press? Worse. Lundquist laughed a joyless little laugh. Only thing worse is a politician. Jesse laughed, too. You should have been a detective.